Everyone faces questions and decisions that require insight and answers as we move forward personally, professionally, and corporately in all areas of this thing we call life in America today. Hello, this is Joe Schofield, and I invite you to tune in every Monday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. as we talk together and hear from key leaders of all ages and backgrounds about your questions. Interesting, informative, intuitive, but always encouraging. Tune us in on BBS Radio Network.
Join Pastor Joe and co-hosts Ron Greer, Dr. Paul Hall, Stephanie Thayer, and Dr. Craig Thayer in Raising Expectations.
Hey, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, family, friends, and everybody else who may have tuned in tonight. We're thankful you tuned in to your show, Raising Expectations. We appreciate you every week, and as we tell you every week, we never take you for granted. We thank God that you do tune in, and it's our prayer that He's raising your expectations in many different and varied ways in your personal life and walk and talk with Him, with your families, and your friends. As you all know, we're all born-again believers on this program. We're blood-bought Christians who believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. He came to earth for one reason, and that was to die on the cross to pay the price for our sins. And that took place after He walked on this earth and understood the problems and the expectations that we all have in life and the needs that we need met. And that's why it's our prayer that He meets those needs in your life, because we know that He will, and we know that He can, and we know that He's ready as you look to and talk to Him about it. Thanks so much for being with us tonight. We've got a great program planned for you. I know you've been reading about it because I've been getting your correspondence, and we've got a great friend of ours back with us who is actually, he's been kind of doing the circuit since some events that happened here in July, and you're going to hear a lot about that from him. But just before we go, we're going to go ahead before we begin the program and introduce our family back to you. We're so thankful that Dr. Paul Hall is back with us. Dr. Paul is a retired pastor. He's a theologian. He's a counselor. He's a teacher. He's a guy that the love of God just flows out of his heart with everybody that he knows. He's been my friend 55 years, and everyone who knows this man loves him. He's come back from some difficult times leading his family back in the Midwest. As you know, many of you prayed that God called his dad home to be with him. And we've been praying for Paul. We love this man very much. It's great to see you, brother. And we're glad you're there. And yeah, good to be back, man.
Good to see your family.
Amen. Well, your family's right here. We've been waiting for you. Glad you're safe and sound. Good to have you with us. And so as Paul joins with me, if you make our way back across the United States, if we get on the air currents and fly east to the East Coast, actually the south part of the East Coast, as you know, we're going to run into the Thayers, Stephanie and Dr. Craig Thayer. Stephanie, as you know, is a health and wellness coach. She's known all over for her ability to help you with your health and what she teaches and shares. Her website, Wellness with Steph, you can find. It's attached there to our website. And on her website, Wellness with Steph, you're going to find her new one, Live Your Life Out Loud. Live Your Life Out Loud. She counsels and works with women all over the nation that are involved with her program. And she helps them to see what God's doing in their lives as they call in faith and work together through things in their lives. She shared a great one just this last week, and where it says, when someone knows you love them, then they know that you care. So you'll want to read this. My daughter reads it each week. And you can find that once again at Wellness with Steph, Live Your Life Now. You can find these sites on our website, which is Raising Expectations. You'll find that on bbsradio.com/Raising Expectations. Again, that's bbsradio.com/Raising Expectations. And you'll find us all there. You'll find these websites. And you'll find about what God is doing through Stephanie to help many of these ladies that she works with. And you'll also find on that page, you'll see her husband there, Dr. Craig Thayer, on his website. That's listed there. And the two of them are listed on our site. He is a surgeon. He's actually a trauma surgeon for so many, many years. And he's a missionary surgeon. He gives of his time helping as missionary doctor in many places, just giving what God's given him back to help people in times of need there. Trauma surgeon is, you know, someone who, when they bring someone from an accident, they don't know quite what to do. That's the person they go to and they say, Craig, what do we do now? And I say this often, but it's important. Many of you have mentioned this back to me. I love the way when I first met Craig, he put his hands up and says, these are the hands when I'm scrubbing up and to go into surgery. I always ask God, Lord, take my hands, use them for your glory and work to save the life of this patient that I'm about to do surgery upon. This is a great godly man and brother in the Lord, special couple in the Lord. And they're all the way back there in Georgia, which is Dalton, Georgia, not far from Chattanooga, north of Atlanta, not too far from the coast. And you find a lot of great furniture there. So anyway, you'll find that listed. His book, he's also an author, is called Saved, One Trauma Surgeon's True Accounts of the Miracles of His Life. And the thing that I love on that book is called Finding God in the Ordinary. The great thing about being a believer is, you know, God works in the ordinary things of life. It's the little things of life that you hardly know are coming that God always is ready to work in. Why? Because he loves us, because he's got a plan for us. And that's what this one is all about. And so you'll find when you get that book, it's an incredible example of what God's done in his life. And right above there on our website, you'll find my book, Legitimate Faith. There it is on the side, Producing Authentic Hope. And in that book, you'll find that it was endorsed by one of my mentors, a man I love, Zig Ziglar. I wrote this book. It's from the Bible. It's the story of the first 11 verses that you'll find there in the New Testament that have to do in Hebrews with the great faith chapter. And faith is something that works, and legitimate faith not only produces hope, but raises your expectations. So I hope you'll look at that and hope that you'll look at the book Saved also at the same time. Paul's working on a book about all of us coming up on what's happening in on our program each week, and he's compiled this over the last few years. And so I hope that you'll be ready for that. That's coming down the pike. A lot of good things are happening. But moving right along for time's sake tonight, if we were coming back to the West, which we're going to do now, and we always say that, but we'll cover right over the climb over the side of Georgia, over Alabama, Mississippi, head through northern Louisiana, and head into east side of Texas. And there we will be where we find one of our favorite pastors in the state of Texas. And that would be Ron Greer, who's safely back from Milwaukee. And it was great to have him back with us. And he's been doing some, as they say in Texas, ministering there up in Milwaukee. And he's with Man in the Mirror based out of Florida, but he works with helping godly men. And you'll find his page there on our site, Man in the Mirror. And he's in the Texas area, and you'll find what he does there. Read the story about Ron. And as you listen with Ron and all of us each week, you'll see what God's doing in his life. So this is the great team of people that it blessed my life every week, and God's put them together in a very special way as you share back with me each week. Many of you have looked forward to this week, and we're glad that you're with us tonight. So I'm going to bring us all back together now. And as TJ, our engineer, we thank God for him every week, and we thank God for BBS Radio Television out of Houston, Texas, and actually Spring, and they are they're the best, and they love God. They love each of us. They're just wonderful, wonderful people. So our engineer there has got our special guest tonight, and that would be also coming from Texas, Frank Roberson. And you've heard a lot about Frank, and in fact, Frank's been kind of busy on the television radio side himself ever since we saw God put his hand up and take care of President Trump when there was that assassination attempt on his life. Frank Roberson is back with us, and he is a man who is trained using his God-given skills to become one of the best personnel protection people today, founding his agency, the Black Rhino Executive Protection Agency. Now, many sought Frank's opinions, as I said, on the events and the coverage of that assassination attempt here in July. He has a great insight on what we're facing with the criminal elements that have infiltrated illegally across our borders. Frank brings it all down to where we live as the members of society today. The thing I love about this is he says, and I want to quote him right now, learning how to spot pre-event indicators can significantly improve personal safety. Whether you're at the grocery store or attending church, detecting potential threats is the key to staying safe. Response should be conditioned and automatic, and we should know what to do and how to do it. We know that God gives us gifts, don't we, friends, and talents that he gives us to use when he calls us to do what he calls us in life to become. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10, the Bible says, "For we're God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works for which he called us to do before the foundation of the world." Now, Frank is somebody who is doing these things in his life, and I love what he and his wife, Christy, the walk that they have and how he talks about his wife and what God does in his family. And Frank's with us again tonight, and as I said, he's been on some radio, television, different shows, and they've been asking him, Frank, what should we be looking for to protect the president? And we always like to ask him in line with those questions, what should we be looking for? Because there's a lot going on, and we don't know what's going to happen between now and the election day. So, Frank, we welcome you to our show again tonight. Brother, you're part of the family. We love and appreciate you and your wife. And we want to give you the round of applause from Raising Expectations to bring you on the program. Stephanie, I got it right. Thank you. Okay. Welcome to our show,
almost
Frank.
Almost doing it.
Almost did it, yeah. And, Frank, it's great to see you, brother. Share them from your heart with us.
Appreciate you guys having me again. That's great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Tell us what's going on and kind of what you've been sharing on the show there and a couple of shows I've seen you on now in Texas and what's been going on.
Well, it's been kind of crazy since I think it was July 13th. Got a lot of press reaching out for expert analysis on what happened that day. Radio in different areas, Cincinnati, New Orleans, couple times WBAP here in Dallas as well. And then when Taylor Swift's concerts were canceled over in Austria, got a call to go on air with some quotes on safety for concerts, that type of thing. And then our first national television interview was on Fox. And it was, not last Monday, but the Monday before, Christy had a bad accident, and actually Tuesday, right before surgery, I had to go on to do this national television interview, and I got stuck in traffic in a car accident trying to get there to pre-op before she went into surgery, and got behind an accident, got there with 6 minutes to spare, shed the t-shirt and shorts and threw on the suit and tie, put a trash can up on a desk in a little bitty one of those little rooms where people grieve, and put a sticky note on the door, said, "Hold on, stay out," and did my first national interview with like 6 minutes to prepare.
Right. And,
it was pretty cool. I guess it's leading to more because they've asked me back, which is pretty cool. And so you might see a little bit more, but it's been interesting because being able to share that experience of 23 years as a protection guy, and especially in the advanced operations area, was interesting because some of the folks around the country on those radio shows got an insight that they normally didn't get, which is some of the feedback I got. So it was really fun to be able to share those my experience with them on a potential national tragedy that was averted by a immigration slide. And so it's been an interesting last month and a half or so.
I know I've got some questions, but you all go ahead first. You've got some questions for them, I'm sure. Tank, you got one there? You're looking strong.
Well, I always do, because I've heard so much of, the most recent thing I heard about President Trump was that they weren't even Secret Service. They were Homeland Security people that did an online video, the new wave of way we learn now, and part of it didn't even work, so they weren't even fully educated.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy, the video that they watched. Somebody asked about that, and not arrogantly, but I said, I have a team together that could have done the job in the counter surveillance side of it in the crowd and helps figure out where agents needed to be. But one thing that most didn't understand when I was on all those programs is that former presidents don't have the full on details that the sitting president or sitting vice president have. When I was honored and lucky enough to be part of a 9-man civilian team to help protect Bush and Clinton in San Francisco at the Ritz-Carlton. We were in charge of locking down the hotel, but there were only, I think, 8 total agents, 4 per president. And they don't care. They don't have those full teams. So why he wasn't protected, being the threat that he has, being that he's running for president again and doing those huge outside rallies, I have no idea. But every show I've done, I've said the same thing. The person, the agent in charge that turns out to be the one, apparently was not up to snuff on what to do and not experienced. Whoever made that decision in the Pittsburgh field office to set the perimeter at only 100, 120 yards or something like that, and those buildings are outside the perimeter with a straight-on view of the president on stage, that was the big mistake, because all the things that happened after that would have been averted if that perimeter was set at 1,000 yards like it's supposed to be. So that's, to me, is always a cause and effect. And when you go in and make those decisions, you know, you start out with a pre-advance where you get an aerial of where you're going to go and you make that decision. And then you go back up and in this instance, stand on the stage and you look around and you look out and you have to have that imagination. And if any of you guys watch the testimony of the former director, one of the things that he said that kind of the media overlooked and no one really talks about, when he said it was a failure of imagination. And when you're in that position and you're an advanced person or a team leader or whatever, and you're standing on that stage, you know, the snipers have their own thing. I'm not a sniper, so I don't pretend to know everything about being a sniper, but I know they have their little sheets where they mark down their statistics and numbers and what they're doing. And in my area, I'm up on stage and I'm looking to make sure we didn't miss a spot, right? You're looking around, oh, there's a water tower there. We didn't think of that water tower. In the aerials, it didn't look like it was that close. So let's put a guy up on the water tower, you know, that overlooks all the buildings. So we don't have any, you know, we're shorthanded anyway. So let's put a guy on the water tower so you see all the buildings, right? So there was none of that imagination, because if we can think of it, the bad guys have already thought about it, right?
Right.
What happened in this case? This kid, because of the perimeter being so small, was able to fly a drone, was able to take a rangefinder, was able to walk around almost freely, park his bike, do all this stuff that's inside the perimeter. Those are those pre-event indicators I tell you about every week. And that comes back to why Black Rhino is called Black Rhino. They probably thought they had an ironclad plan. They didn't have the Secret Service, but they had Homeland Security guys. But they had this plan together, and one kid ran through that like a rhinoceros running through your boardroom and just totally blew that plan all to shreds. Mm-hmm. And communication, I mean, the 30 seconds from when that law enforcement officer got up on the roof and had a gun pointed to him and was on his radio yelling, he's got a gun, he's got a gun. That 30 seconds there between that moment and the first shot, man, somebody had to have been in the command post. Somebody had to have been able to relay that information. That 30 seconds right there could have cost us a former president and the next president. So there's some failures, but it all goes back to, if you set the perimeter, that kid doesn't get to do all those things that the pre-event indicators are eliminated.
Yeah, that was my next question. It was, you know, the comms. You have essentially, well, at least 3 law enforcement teams. You know, you got your Secret Service. You got probably a few FBI that are disguised as normal citizens. And then local law enforcement, sheriff and police probably. And it just seemed like there was no pre-briefing, okay, what radio frequency are we going to get on for this?
Well, I worked around the Secret Service for a while, whether it was working with a congressman and picking him up when Air Force One landed, whatever, going through that, or the hotel situation. When we were at the hotel, we had our own comms. They wouldn't let us on or anywhere near theirs. Of course, we're civilians. We weren't local law enforcement. They did walk us around their advance plan so that we knew where our guys had to move when they had the presidents walk by. Our guys had to jump in closets and up little staircases and hide until they walked past. But they are the Secret Service, and I think that sometimes is overlooked because they don't like anyone in their bubble. And, I'm an example. I'm a huge Second Amendment guy. I don't care how you carry it or whatever, but I want to know where all the guns are in the room. when my boss is in the room. You know what I'm saying? And
Yes.
I don't want anybody else around or let anyone else around that has something that can do harm to my guy. And I take that to an extreme that being the Secret Service protecting a president, they don't want anybody else in there. I mean, former, current law enforcement, former law enforcement, military, they don't want anyone on their comms. And that's the problem, because that should have been fixed after 9/11 when they put all the comms on allegedly on the same, being able to communicate with everybody. I don't think you're ever going to hear that they're going to let anyone get on their comms. What I think is going to happen, the best case scenario, is they make sure somebody is in that command center, because there's always a command center. And I think that's going to be our best bet moving forward. But I think that Secret Service part of it over the years is really, this is where it shows the weakness of that, because it looks like it's a conspiracy when it's such a rookie mistake. Some of those mistakes are just rookie mistakes. And it makes people wonder, when, especially when now the Secret Service won't tell us anything about how it happened, why it didn't happen, who's lost their job, how they're going to do it better. And that causes problems. And until they're completely transparent up front, people are always going to think something's going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I guess I'm one of those people also, because there's a chorus of rookie mistakes that you say to yourself, that's not possible given the agencies they're involved.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, like you said, it leaves it open to going,
mm-hmm.
even where at the rooftop, you see the aerial photos, you're going, there's mm-hmm. no way that no one didn't look at that and say, okay, that's, you can't.
I have honestly never seen it. So I don't want to say sloppy. And I want to preface this by saying, when I say something about what happened that day, the purpose isn't to try to blame anyone. It's try to identify what happened so that it can be better next time. I have actually had people, former Secret Service guys that have worked on details with me over the years, that their job was a staircase or stairwell three blocks away.
Right,
they are
right.
very detailed about what they do, and to have something so blatant and so close, that just absolutely it just blows your. Even Christy was sitting there going, "Well, why didn't they have somebody on the water tower over there?" So obvious. Let the kid walk around, because they didn't have the counter surveillance teams inside the crowd. You know, when they do the rope lines and everything, there are guys in the crowd and gals in the crowd that are dressed like everybody else, that are watching hands. They're watching the body language and all that kind of stuff. And I know that they don't like to talk about their sources and methods on their counter surveillance team. But I'll tell you, you're looking for people. And I don't care how good you are or how well you train to do something bad. It's written all over your face if you're right. watching for it.
Right.
You can be
right.
in a whole crowd of everybody. If you have a bad intention, it is written all. You stick out like a sore thumb. No one was watching for that, which is crazy.
And I guess part of my question with him walking around, even getting on top of the building, I mean, I just can't imagine that area not being surveilled or cartoned off. It just makes no sense, especially when people in the crowd see him up climbing up there and you still
absolutely.
Don't.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I guess you did touch on one other issue, because my next question was, I know when as a firefighter, hazmat and our, what you call team, tech teams. We have usually two or three agencies involved, and there is, again, to overcome the lack of communication, everybody has to have someone in the communication. Well, back then we had a van, so that everybody hears everybody's communication. My radio is not communicating with the state police or with the state lab, but when I communicate, they all hear. So my guy in the van, my commander, can respond, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So my question with them, even if you get three agencies aren't communicating with one another, there's no command booth someplace where someone is communicating or either coordinated communication. I
supposed to be. Yeah, that's the morning meeting. Even going and taking a client to the big horse races, we had 7:30 or 8:30 a.m. briefings with law enforcement, and everyone gets together. Everyone talks about the threats. When it was in England, we're going to the Royal Ascot. MI6 was there. MI5 was there. The uniform division was there. Everyone was there. And we all, even the protection guys, that they knew we were there. we're all there talking about the threats and everything. There is supposed to be somebody in that command room, command center. So if someone on regular law enforcement taps a radio and says, he's got a gun, he's got a gun, there's a Secret Service agent right there that's recalling that, hey, get him off the stage, you know, or whatever their code word is to get the guy off the stage. The other thing is we practice and we do drills and we can get a guy off a stage in that same situation in 6 seconds in a vehicle and off and running. I don't know how a minute 38 happened, and I don't know when the whole group hug thing and kind of wobble around thing came up, but that was, I'm sitting there going, get him off the stage. You even heard an agent. Let's go on you. And they still took another minute and 20 seconds after that. I don't understand that part of that. That was a hired, a real trained person, or there was another person out there. We would have a dead former president and some Secret Service agents.
Absolutely.
Because
well, you know, I would say that's my, I guess my opinion as well. So even as a Marine Corps, a basic boot camp, I'm firing at 200, 150, 200, and 500 yards, right?
Yeah.
And even as a private boot camp, I can hit a target at 300 and 400 feet.
Yeah.
So it just boggles my brain that you would allow somebody that close, and it goes back again. I still think it was a miracle. I really do. Yes. That you were that close and did not hit him.
Yeah.
At that last moment. But it's mind boggling to me. It's just mind boggling that you could have that many. I could see if it's one or two mistakes or maybe three or four, just weird things that take place
all the way.
Just in my amateur head, I'm counting six or seven mistakes that, that just brain this one.
Yeah.
How does that happen? Are they that lax where those kind of things have happened or can happen? And even with Homeland Security, I'm still puzzled by how that took place even with them. Even they weren't Secret Service. They had kind of coordination there someplace.
I understand. Even if you leave everything else, the decision for the perimeter, he gets to the law enforcement parking lot and the law enforcement officer that's there said, hey, there's a kid in our lot, and they don't go see him.
Right, didn't see him.
So they see all this other stuff. Even if all that other stuff does happen, if you're short-staffed, all that stuff, if you have someone on the water tower, you still see the tops of those buildings.
Right.
Exactly. I mean, it's mind-boggling. I don't know. I mean, an inexperienced agent setting up that, you can only push that so far because the other agents are smart enough to figure it out too. You know, the Pittsburgh field office isn't full of a bunch of rookies. I mean, there's got to be, you know, other people in there that are going, wait a minute, why don't we cover this? But somebody overruled if that happened. But, I mean, it can't all go on that one person, and that's probably why four others in that office were suspended as well. But
here's another question I have. I ran for Congress a number of times and was in the company of a number, George Bush initially and a couple other folks. I recall a situation where an individual, it was John McCain. So we're in a gathering and someone thought that there was a guy acting weird, came through the wrong door, and they literally picked McCain up and carried him out.
Yeah.
Now I've been in the company of President Trump. I know he's a big guy, but I'm just thinking, they didn't pick him and move him. They actually couldn't get him up and move him.
Yeah.
Is it just the fact you had the people too small there, or if he was struggling trying to resist them? What's your take on that?
I don't know. I mean, there's a picture of him just sitting there huddled down. I mean, he wasn't shot in the leg. He's got, like, nicked on the ear. I mean, he should have been able to get right back up. And as soon as he got up, he was fine. But I mean, I'm sure there's some shock to it, you know. But the agents, when Ronald Reagan was shot, they unceremoniously tossed him in the back of the car and the guy jumped on top of him and the driver took off.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Even when they got him to the SUV, the SUV looked like it was pulling out of my garage in the morning just to go down to go get drinks.
Yeah.
I mean, it was slow rolling. And I don't understand it. The way you train it is when even if he's bigger than you. You get him by the back of the shirt, this forearm, you put him down to your level and you move him. That's where your leverage is to move them. I don't care who it is. If you get that leverage to move, you're moving him. And it doesn't take that long to get him off the stage. And he's been around long enough. He's had security for long enough. He knows how that works.
Exactly. Exactly.
But they all piled on him. And we would have a much different situation if there was a trained team of three that snuck in from the border and got in there and scoped things out, and they were situated in different places. We would be having a completely different conversation. Or if just that one guy was a trained guy. But, I mean, yeah, I can't explain the mistakes. All I can say is when you go back and look at it, if it was my detail to advance – the perimeter wouldn't have been set that short, and we would have had somebody on the water tower. And I mean, you got to have, I mean, he, even the Secret Service director, the acting, said their number one goal is to control the high ground. And the high ground was not even covered. The highest ground that overlooked it was not covered.
Yeah, that begs the question, too. People begin to talk again. And again, I'm no expert whatsoever on this. So, but the question was brought up many times with the political programs going on the way they are, with politics involved in all of it. But what about this diversity program and all these other things? When they started to compare the Secret Service, if you had the A team out there, say, like they did with Ronald Reagan, you can still see the size of the guys, the speed of the guys, what they did. Again, I appreciate what you said, Frank, not belittling anybody. I don't like... one of my favorite sayings is some people can speak freely because they aren't hampered by the facts. So I don't know exactly what they're saying right there. But with diversity and all these questions, and finally the acting person, she retired quickly. I mean, are we just watching, how can I say this other than to say the denigration, basically, of the standards and qualities of certain organizations within the political backdrop of Washington, which would include the Secret Service, where they are not what they were at one point for what reason ever it might be. They didn't, with so many different things happening wrong, like Ron was saying, so many things. If there were just a couple or three, it would be one thing. And then to hear some political pundits say on both sides of the aisle, but the fact is that Democrats and Republicans together, whether they're liberal or conservative, were both saying, this is wrong. This is very wrong. Something's dead wrong. So I know this would be just kind of a shot, but has anybody shared with you or did in one of your discussions have any insight you might share with the audience on that question?
Not exactly, but the former director, the one that she probably could have kept her job a little longer if she hadn't said it was because of the sloped roof.
Because, I could not believe how quickly the internet there,
literally while she was testifying they showed the sniper on a sloped roof during the telecast. But she was a Secret Service agent at one time, so she's gone through the training. She had been through the training, went to go work in the corporate sector, private sector at a corporation, Frito-Lay or something like that, I believe, something like that. And so she knew. The acting director now was the number two guy. So he knows. He's been around for 25 years.
Yeah, he knows. Yeah.
I don't know how much the DEI part played a role in that as much as they are known for their redundancies, right? They make sure there's a backup plan. There's three, four routes. There's this and that. Everything has got a redundancy. And it just seems like there were 12 agents on Jill Biden, first lady, in Philadelphia. There were Kamala Harris's protection detail was also in Pennsylvania. So there was also a group of guys that were still assigned to the UN NATO summit in New York. But still, I mean, they all were, except for the Homeland Security guys, the lead agents and the people who put it together in Pittsburgh are all trained and all know what they're doing, and they drop the ball. I don't know what Secret Service agent on Trump's detail was the one that was suspended, but I have a feeling it had something to do with not getting him off the stage in a minute 38. But that was the team. That was the A team right there. The four guys for the people that were assigned to him. The one guy, the main guy with the sunglasses you see in all those photos, has been with Trump since 2016. Right. He knows what's going on. He's been around. He was with him at the convention the next week. The guy's been around. He was there when Trump did his press conference at the border recently. He's been there since 2016. And to sit down with him, you probably learn a lot about what exactly went wrong. And whether they watched a video for an hour or whatever, you can still put somebody, you know, my team at the hotel at the Ritz-Carlton, our team mm-hmm. leader there, we had 9 of us, right? And our team that isn't trained in the way the Secret Service likes to have things handled, they had to walk us through and tell us what it was. We didn't want to watch a video. They told us, we need your guys here. My partner and I happen to be 30 feet from the stage in the last line of defense if someone tries to run up on the stage. But they are good at making sure there's people where they're supposed to be. So it doesn't, I mean, again, it's still, I don't understand why somebody else didn't speak up, because the agent in charge of Trump's detail should have been able to say, why don't we have somebody up there? Because he had to have had some time to get up on the stage to see where everything's at, to make sure everything is going. Unless they were just complacent and just didn't care. I don't think they didn't care. Maybe the people from Homeland Security, they watched the video. Oh, we're just going to go on this smooth thing. They all love him. They're not, nothing's going to happen in the field in Butler, Pennsylvania.
Right.
It could have happened. I don't know. But I just still go down to the fact that if the perimeter had been set properly, none of the other things would have ever happened.
Hmm. Yeah. Hey, I'd like to ask a technical legal question here. All right. Did the Secret Service, let me back up, a guy on a roof with a rifle. All right. He's aiming at the former president of the United States. Do you have to give this guy warning, or do you have the go to take him down before he can do something? Just wondering.
The Fox interview that I did was a recap of the of a hearing that happened with Dan Bongino and Eric Prince and some guys and some members of Congress, and that actually came up. And they're supposed to be able to make that decision right then and there.
Okay.
But if you are unsure if he has a weapon, there's scenarios where he might have had to try to call for a clearance to take the shot. But if it's a clear, I don't know. I forget if they were able to or discerned whether that sniper could tell if he had a firearm or if he was just laying on the roof. Mm-hmm. If they had to do it all over again, if they saw anybody up on that roof, I guarantee you that probably would have been shot without question. Mm-hmm. And they'd have to deal with the fact they shot an unarmed guy or whatever the repercussions right. were of overreacting. Right. He didn't have a gun. But I know the... that they are supposed to, especially if they know for sure it's a firearm, they're able to go ahead and shoot, from what I understand.
Okay.
Like I said, I'm not a sniper, so the rules of engagement on snipers are a little bit different than, say, a protection agency and right. a firearm or somebody with their hands in their pocket and acting crazy in a crowd.
What was the time between the time the kid fired his round until he was taken, when he was neutralized? How long did it take?
Well, as long as it takes to hit fire off 8 shots. I mean, mm-hmm. you got 8 shots, 8 rounds off, and okay. and then on the stage, you can hear some, you hear initial
right.
shots, and then you hear a couple more, and then you hear, when the audio is wide open, when it was happening live, you can hear the radio of the guys up on the stage say the shooter's been neutralized, or shooter's down.
Okay.
And, I mean, it was it was seconds, less than a second or two from firing 8 shots. But, you know, the sniper that was immediately over, as you're watching the video of him talking and getting shot, you see the sniper behind. That guy didn't have a line of sight because of the tree branches from where the kid was sitting. It was the sniper team that was out of sight to our screen right as we're watching the rally mm-hmm. that was over on the other rooftop. That had line of sight. So they're a little further away. So probably 155, 160 yards from the shooter. But okay. they're the ones that actually took the shot that took him out, not the ones right behind in our view of how we watched the rally, that sniper team right behind him, they're not the ones that took the shot to neutralize him.
Okay. Just curious about that. You know, how does that work?
Yeah,
there's an imminent threat. You know, who makes the call? Do you have to get permission?
An imminent threat, I don't believe you do. But again, I could be wrong. But I don't think they have any reason to call anyone if there's someone's pointing a gun and they know it's absolutely a gun. Now it could be the person that's about ready to fire wants to make sure, and then a shot's fired while he's deciding should I or should I not.
Right.
But that, I mean, it comes down to that, like a shoot, no shoot situation.
Okay. It's a tough spot to be in.
Wow. Look at I hate to be the sniper that didn't see it and didn't shoot. I mean, that guy's got to be going through that scenario in his head at night, sitting there with his family or wife or something. God, I mean, I didn't know if it was a gun. I should have shot it, 2 seconds sooner, and all that other stuff. The firefighter would still be alive. The other guys would have shot.
Sure.
I mean, I'm sure that haunts him like any other shoot no shoot in law enforcement or any other profession that has no shoot no shoot stuff.
Yeah. Tank, did you have a thought there?
I was just saying. I mean, you're only as strong as your weakest link, right? So you've got those people on the stage. And the guy that's been there since 2016, he was probably in control. But I mean, literally, it was jokingly, but it could have gone just like, okay, we're going on three. And someone says, okay, where are we going? And then, we're going to go on three. You're going to go down this way. Where are we going? This discussion of like, because they're just freaking out, the weakest link is, but not the one that's in control. Because you got to act in unison. So it's like on three or three, and then we go.
That's a training thing. But I will tell you, as many shoot no shoot scenarios that we've done, or anybody else, when you have a gun pointed at you, it all that goes out the window. I mean, you all of a sudden you can't think about that. But they train for that when there's a shooter, and you get to the guy on the stage to get him off the X. They call it as soon as humanly possible to get him off the X. And you heard the team leader say, on you, let's go. And then it was still another minute. So I don't know what the delay was. At some point, we'll find out what the delay was. But, one time I had a firearm pointed at me, and you sit there and you think, you can't think about the training. Another time where I had the hand on the firearm and had a guy saw me coming around and put his hand in his pocket, and we knew he was up to no good. I had to tell him if he pulled his hands out of his pocket, I was going to shoot you.
Shoot him.
Those things, that is a little easier because you're not getting it right. It's not right in your nose. But afterwards, you're shaking because you go through the training and everything. And Secret Service goes to, they get on that one agent for not being able to put her gun in her holster. But, there are situations where they train or they're under a controlled environment. When it happens, what is that saying that Mike Tyson said about having a plan? Everyone has a plan until you
get punched in the face.
So, you can plan it out and do it, but the more humans you have around it, the better odds that somebody's going to make a mistake. We had something happen at George Lucas's Christmas party one year, and there were 9 agents there. There are 2 on Mr. Lucas, and something had happened inside that facility, and there were guys that were around us that were looking to us going, what do we do now? What do we do now? What do we do now? I said, haven't you trained for this? Yeah, but this is not in a facility like this. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter who you are, Secret Service or a top executive protection person. You're going to react to your training this is going to sound really weird. I don't want to be weird or anything, but this sounds really weird. I walk into a place. I did a jewelry escort a couple weeks, 3 weeks ago. And I'm standing there, and this store had been robbed before. So I'm standing in there. I'm waiting over here. The store's about to close. This is a prime time for somebody, if they know there's jewelry moving, to come in and do something. So what am I sitting there doing? I'm sitting there watching. These guys are closing up. They got one last customer in there. I'm not sitting there fiddling my thumbs. I'm sitting there going, right. Somebody comes in. That little thing that opens up, they put the jewelry on to show it to you. That's going to be perfect to grab on my way to that guy and go for the, get him in the throat, just get him off his bound. I'm going through these scenarios. If someone pops in that door, most guys are sitting there, will sit there and text on their phone. The shooting at the church in Houston, you see the video of the police officer sitting there playing on his phone when the lady and the child walk by, and she's got the gun in the long coat. You know, it happens all the time. You know, I had a law enforcement driver that was assigned to me for a protection detail with a guy that was over from Russia. Turns out we had an incident on that detail, but this guy got let go the day before because he just couldn't simply follow the simple instructions on pickup drop-offs. He left us on the curb for about 2.5 minutes waiting for him to come around the block when he should have already been there. Those situations like that, this is a trained law enforcement officer that drives his patrol car every day in that city, and he couldn't follow the little bitty thing to be there at this time when we're coming out. And those things happen. And you train for it, you train for it. But when you're in that scenario, it just, it's totally different.
Well, that's, that would be one of my question. Having been in the training before, I mean, those, you go through multiple scenarios over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. That's been designed so it becomes second mm-hmm. nature. So it, like you mentioned, a police officer, what in your mind would be the reason for how you get to a point where you do not react, or you lose that your training? Is it routine? Too much routine you're involved in, or is it what do you think leads to that?
I think because things very rarely happen, but you go through such intense training. I'll give you an example. The family that you guys know that I protected in Dallas. I've been doing this for 23 years. So every time I'm going someplace, I run my routes. Even then, after all these years of experience and everything else, doing all this stuff in Dallas, we're going to the fair. I go advance the fairgrounds. I get in, I get the parking spots, I get the better parking, I get a perfect position. I run the routes and everything.
Get out quickly.
Yes, get out, you go out quickly. So then when you get there, you sit there and go, okay, nothing's really going to happen. It's a state fair. I've been doing this for so long. Why do I need to go drive to the nearest police station or hospital or fire station? Why do I need to find a location to take them to in case something really bad happens that is going to be a secure location that no one's going to come look for us? Even then, I drive. After all these years, I go and drive to the emergency room. And what happens after 23 years, I have to use my evacuation route to the emergency room.
Right.
I hadn't driven that all these years and still got tired. Oh, nothing's going to happen. I've never had to use an emergency route before. Oh. If I hadn't driven it, I still couldn't get the client's daughter to the emergency room because I wouldn't have driven the route, knew there was construction on this other, the direct route, had to go a couple separate surface streets to get there. I wouldn't have known that. I think that's what plays into this to kind of answer your question with a story, because most people don't think anything's going to happen. Secret Service snipers, not counting snipers, Secret Service agents haven't fired a weapon, and I don't think ever on a presidential detail. So when are they going to be expecting, oh my God, a shot just got fired. What am I supposed to do again? I forgot what I'm supposed to do again. We train on this, but this is at a rally. We train for a thing on walking down the street on inauguration day. What are we going to do? The guy sitting that's normally in a stairwell gets called up and say, hey, we're going to put you in the crowd. If someone shoots, he's used to being in a stairwell and responding and questioning people that go to a stairwell. I mean, there's so many scenarios that pop up that would create a question in your mind and what should I do? I think there's a complacency in the thing. No one's going to do anything. I've been looking at this place for 3 weeks. No one's going to show up. You know, I think there's a lot of that in it.
That's that advantage you say the criminal has.
Yeah. And I've told you this when I first started on this program a long time ago, which has been fantastic. I love joining you guys. I don't get to talk about this stuff very often. But the first thing when I was sat down, I was told that I needed to start providing protection for elected officials I was traveling with. The Secret Service agent I sat down with told me two things: plan for every eventuality. And if you can think of it, the bad guys have already thought of it. That's the imagination. You know, I've been sitting there watching in the past. I remember, I forget if it was which president it was, flying into the UN thing, and they're doing the helipad thing, right? And I'm sitting there going, man, I wonder if they had divers check out underneath the plank, the platform, and any construction that's been going on in the previous time. They knew that something was going to go on in case someone stuck something under the helipad.
Right.
That's the imagination you got to have. And when you're doing that kind of job, and all those guys, the frontline agents, all have that. The Homeland Security agent investigators, probably not.
Right.
But you can't blame them because they were put in that situation.
Right, right.
You've got to blame the lack of real Secret Service agents being right. there. But those four guys that are assigned to Trump all know those things. They all know that something can happen and somebody's already thought of it if they're looking out there at the crowd. Yeah. Wow. So it's that imagination that goes back to that failure of imagination that the acting director now, he knows. Somebody didn't get up on that stage and realize that that perimeter is too small.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to make sure my wife watches the recording of this show because she thinks I'm absolutely insane. I never go anywhere. I never sit my back to the door. She always asks, what is wrong with you? I'm sorry.
I think Christy does too. When we were dating and we went to one of the malls in Dallas that has a movie theater in there. And we came out of that movie. It was a Saturday night and there was nobody around. I got hairs on my neck, got stood up. We need to get out of here. We need to go right now. We're not shopping. We're going straight to the car. We're getting out of here. I'm sure she thought I was nuts when we were dating. She understands the morning, but that's what, yeah, you're right. I mean,
well, she does. I think I said before, we go to hotels. I walk from my door to the stairway. I know how many steps there are. I know how many steps down to each level. I know how many floors there are.
Yeah.
Drives her crazy. Wow.
So we're going to have to jump in recording. Here for a second, guys, looking at our clock right now. But that's basically on a lighter note, almost like preparing a road trip with your kids. Prepare for the eventual. It could happen any minute, right, Frank? You never know what's coming next. It could be. So make sure you take your checklist with you. In looking at these things, yeah, that human nature sure does make sense what you're saying, Frank. Makes a lot of sense. We could really put ourselves in someone else's shoes and kind of see that. But boy, I'm glad they're cranking it up now with everything that's happening close to we get to the election. And thinking about that, we'd like to take just a minute, ladies and gentlemen, to thank you for watching our show tonight and ask Stephanie if she would. We always kind of bring one message to you. If she could share it for a moment, we appreciate your help helping us to bring this program. And Stephanie has a word to share for us. We appreciate it.
Sure. This was definitely a guy's show tonight because you guys were all excited and talking, and I'm just taking notes like, yeah, drive safe and where, you know. So we are grateful that you hang out with us. We appreciate you coming back every week, sharing the show. We always want to bring you good and insightful content. You can follow along with all there is to learn about us at bbsradio.com/raising expectations. Ooh, look at the top.
Very That's good.
Nice. There's a new little banner up top. So we're on air right now. So look at that. And as you start to scroll down, you can see the different areas that you can donate. We always appreciate your donations. It does take money to produce and be on the air and all the things. And then as you continue to scroll down, you can watch and listen to past shows right there with all the links, and it tells you which guests we've had. And then as you continue to go down, you can learn about each of the co-hosts, how to connect with us individually, and Pastor Joe and Craig's book are also down in there. There's all kinds of goodies on that page. So share with somebody that you think might enjoy one of the shows. We really appreciate that. And just you staying connected with us, and we're streamed on all the possible streaming places. So you can find us there too.
That's right. Thanks, Steph. It's right there. All that information and the way to make it work is all there. And thanks guys at the station. Appreciate your work on that. Thanks, TJ. It sure does look good. And we're going to have to kind of wrap it up now. We've got our time has gone by. Frank, all of us, we sure appreciate both of you. And we're sure praying for you and Christy and all that God's doing in your lives. And we're with you. Any requests you'd like us to pray for you in any particular way?
For Christy, for a full recovery. She's got a long road ahead of her. It's going to be probably the beginning of December before she can walk unassistedly and unassisted and without equipment. Her beloved sports have been put on hold, her horse showing and her marathon runs. And I would just ask for prayers that, you know, that she's able to get back out on that marathon circuit bigger and stronger and faster. Not bigger. She's going to shoot me. Oops. Faster.
Oh, wow.
And stronger. And then
that was a guy slip. We give you grace.
Sorry.
I heard them and go, whoa.
And make sure that she can get back on the horse. It was a freak accident. The horse didn't mean it. They just finished sixth in the world together. So okay. It's a wonderful horse. So just prayers that she can come back bigger and better than she was before.
Amen. Well,
here's an idea for you, Frank. I know a gentleman who ran marathons with his son in a wheelchair who couldn't do it. So maybe that's a good thing you could do. Put in a wheelchair and she could still do her marathons that way.
Motorize it, Frank.
Motorized wheelchair. We'd strap a lawnmower engine on there. Yeah.
Exactly.
There we go.
Zero turn. Hey. Well, zero turn wheelchair.
Okay, we have to close. I'm calling it. We're past time.
Yeah, we got to close. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much. And Frank, remember to pray for Frank and Chrissy. It's your prayers that will make a difference. We know you're working in their lives. Frank, thanks, brother. We love and appreciate you guys. And on behalf of everybody here, God bless and keep you. Remember, talk to the Lord tonight. Pray for Frank. Pray for your needs. God's already ahead of you on it. And when you wake up tomorrow, see what he has to say to you about special plans for that day. God bless and keep you. And arrivederci, that's my Italian for the night. Pretty impressive, right, guys? There you go. Get the book on our language. Have a great night. God bless.
Arrivederci.
Hasta la vista.
Friends, thanks for joining us on this week's program of Raising Expectations. We profoundly hope you found it engaging and at times humorous, but most of all, uplifting, so that we may, with you, one topic at a time each week, become more encouraged to move forward to an exciting future in, as we always say, this thing called life in America today. So let not your hearts be troubled, your family, finances, faith, freedom. It can be a great future as we talk, listen, respect, and pull together. Please let me hear from you. You can reach me at 972-922-8556. That's 972-922-8556. Or Joe Schofield on Facebook or LinkedIn. It'd be a pleasure to know you, and we hope you'll listen in again next week on the BBS Radio Network.